the next 2 weeks are going to be iffy for me.
For I'm hoping I can talk about phase four right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, I'm hoping this week will I can maybe squeak out a win if I get lucky because I only have McCaffrey out.
Who are you playing?
Steven.
Okay, well, he's a weird team.
He could be a 150 guy, could be a 110 guy. And then next week, I'm just preparing myself
for it. I was going to say, next week, you're kind of screwed.
Yeah, I have too many people out on my bye.
You're going to have, like, what, four people?
Well, I got three out on my bye, and Kyrene will still be out on IR at that point still. So,
yeah.
I have four starters out for that game.
I think you'll be okay, though. I think you'll probably win this week. Next week will probably be a close one for you. But you get McCaffrey back next week.
You get McCaffrey back
next week. So that's like three people in one. So I think you're going to be okay.
We'll see. I just don't want to get last. I'm like I talked about, I'm not talking shit to anybody in the league until I finally can do the physical math on it. I can lose every game the rest of the season.
And be okay.
And the last place person can win every game of the season, and I'll still not be in last.
I know. I've never really talked shit, ever. And then last night, or last week, Hood's texting me, and we were playing Hood. And so we ended up talking shit to each other, and I ended up losing. And so I'm like, never again. Never again. I'm not going to do
it. Too early.
I will not do it.
Like I said, until I officially know I'm not getting last, I'm not talking shit.
I think that's a good idea, though. That's a good idea. I still think Sean should have accepted that trade. So, Sean, if you're listening, I am on Cody's side right here.
I thought it was a fair trade.
I think it's fair. I honestly, you have more of an upside getting Devontae to me, but
whatever.
You do you.
Your loss. All right, Kale. So this is Kale's idea for today.
So today, it's not a really big topic.
This might be a shorter podcast.
It might be a shorter one. But I mean, a lot of times y'all always come up to the coaches and, you know, might be like having like this little nagging pain, or maybe whether it's in your knee, your shoulder, your back. And a lot of times when y'all have these naggy little issues, I find that it's because you maybe lack something that it's super easy to maybe fix, right? So like if your back's hurting, right? A lot of times it's just a core issue, right? Or if it's a hip instability or whatever it may be. And so all I really want to do is maybe just go kind of like body part to body part, just from like the most common issues y'all kind of have. And just give y'all maybe a couple things y'all can do to maybe help that. But like I said, nothing crazy, but that's kind of what I was going to go with.
At least in my head, I think probably the four most common would probably be shoulder, back, hip, knee.
Sure. That's kind of what I was thinking.
You have some one-off things like my trap or
trap, your ankle, elbow. Might be a more common one. But those would kind of be like the main ones we were going to kind of focus on today.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know exactly the route that you want to go with it per se, but what do you feel like is like the number one thing that you find with people as to why first let's kind of rewind for a second. I think with people, you have to realize that on a long enough time frame, regardless of the physical activity that you choose, nagging injuries are kind of part of the equation.
Sure. Sure.
Regardless. It doesn't matter if you're doing running, you're going to a traditional gym, you're doing tennis, you're doing golf, you're doing CrossFit, you're doing boxing, whatever your quote-unquote exercise regimen looks like, bike, whatever it may be, inevitably some nagging injury is going to pop up at some point in time. And I say probably my biggest frustration as a coach with some people that we've dealt with in the past is that as soon as one of these roadblocks hits or this bump in the road hits, they automatically just want to shut everything down.
Like shut the whole process down.
Like I'm just done with exercising. I have this little nagging injury. It's one thing if you have like a serious injury, sure, right? And even to a degree, you could even say, even if you have to work around the serious injury until you get surgery and then post, you obviously have a little bit of recovery time. You jump back into some type of exercise
regimen sort of routine
post. But I think so many people are on the fringe of, they're looking for any little excuse to not work out. They're doing it because it's something they have to do. And any little road bump will knock them completely off that. Like any little nagging injury, they're like, oh, well, yeah, I just can't work out now. And that's just their excuse to not do it anymore. I will say that's probably my biggest frustration with somebody as a coach is thinking this because they have this little nag that they can't do anything at all.
Sure.
There's being smart and being dumb about it. Like honestly, if I have any shoulder issues, jumping on a pull-up bar and doing bar muscle-ups or kipping pull-ups is probably your not best approach to see more longevity with your shoulder, right? But coming here and modifying and readjusting, even though that's not the most fun thing in the world to do, is advantageous for the healing process. Sure. Like getting blood flow to the area is a humongous deal for any of these injured areas. So before we kind of went too far there.
No, I think that was a good little point. And sometimes I think that, I don't think people realize, like, when you're working out, like, no matter if you're running, like you were saying earlier, it's like, you're still stressing the body. You're still putting the body under stress, right? So, mm-hmm. like, over time, whether it's a year, whether it's 10 years, whether it's 8 years, you're going to get to a point where something happens. And it's just like kind of like how you attack that, I guess, when it happens, you know? But what do you want to start off with?
I guess we go top down.
Top down?
So, okay. Obviously, shoulder probably being the number one thing.
Shoulder number one. For sure.
I know you've had shoulder issues. I've had shoulder issues. It's been a long time really bad, like, a true shoulder issue. I had some, like, back in high school, like, tore my labrum. Mm-hmm. You know, like, chipped a bone in my shoulder. That was back in high school. But ever since kind of getting into CrossFit, I really had any... I maybe had, like, a little thing here or there that maybe lasted for a couple of weeks. But
like, eventually...
But knock on wood, nothing seriously sure. has happened too bad. Even though I have notoriously, like, tighter shoulders, like, tighter lats. Mm-hmm. But really no shoulder issues, per se. It's kind of weird, though, because I think... Kind of... It's one thing that kind of got in my head, like, you have really great overhead mobility. Mm-hmm. But yet you have shoulder issues.
Sure.
And I have poor overhead mobility. And I have issues. No shoulder issues.
That's
right?
True.
And so I think some people think like stretching and increasing range of motion. Oh, shit. I don't think you're...
I'm not plugged in?
I don't think I'm not plugged in.
You're definitely not plugged
I'm
in.
I'm not plugged in.
Well, Mr. Spell has not been plugged in at all. So I've been talking to myself this whole
time. Well, I think it's still moving. But I don't know if it's catching me or not. Son of a bitch.
And we got a rookie mistake over here.
Rookie mistake. Dude, should we stop this thing?
I mean, you might as well.
All right, some small technical difficulties, but we're back.
He's back.
Okay. But anyways, going back to the original point of, I think some people, just because they increase their range of motion, they feel like that's like an injury prevention.
Sure. And I think that was my thing. Is like, I would always just try to like get more flexibility, like more mobility in the shoulder, mm-hmm. and rather than like actually like strengthening the joint itself.
Yeah.
Right.
And obviously there's added benefits to increasing range of motion, but you are now responsible
for that range of motion,
for more range of motion, which is obviously maybe a higher likelihood that you could potentially get injured mm-hmm. from doing that. I think the biggest thing when it comes to like an increased range of motion, or like let's say you don't have in the range of motion that you maybe need, especially like in a sport, mm-hmm. right, where you get twisted up and obviously put in a position that you don't have the range of motion, obviously where injuries usually occur. Or like something, let's say for CrossFit, for instance, like maybe you catch a snatch, a squat snatch, right? Mm-hmm. And maybe you don't have quite the squat mobility and you're lifting heavy and you get into a deeper range of motion, but not that strength. Like maybe you mess up your hip or your knee or your overhead position because the bar pulls you back or something like that. That's where usually injury would occur because maybe you have lack of that range of motion,
sure.
right? But a lot of times people who have the range of motion, they can get in those end ranges, but the problem is a lot of times they don't have strength in those end range of motions. It's kind of the same problem for both individuals, like person who lacks the range of motion, person who has the end range of motion. They just don't have strength through certain ranges, uh-huh. right? And so I do think that's a misconception that people have, is that just because you can get into position doesn't necessarily mean it's a safe position for you to be in.
Sure.
Per se.
It's almost like you got to own the position in mm-hmm. a way.
Well, yeah, like the very first thing is obviously owning it and be able to breathe at the mm-hmm. position is first off. And then obviously having strength in that range as well, right? And so, like you said, kind of starting from the top down with the shoulder, what do you feel like is the number one thing you see people usually get a injury from when it comes to the shoulder? Do you feel like it's more like from a pressing or from a pull?
Pull, I would probably say a pull.
What
would you say?
I would say probably agree. I don't usually... People might complain of pain...
In a press.
Maybe in a press, but I feel like if there's any... maybe a potential injury that happens like maybe in the moment, it's maybe more often not in... Or like, it's from the pull, or people will go to do a pull-up and they're like, oh, the shoulder kind of hurts when I do that.
I think you have more control in a press, I think. But mm-hmm. I think like in a pull, you have more of a likelihood to maybe like jar something or like kind of like almost like aggressively do something, where there is like a press, you're kind of controlling it the whole way. You're not really, there's no point in time in a press that you really like, let's say you're doing a strict press, there's no really point you can like jar, unless you're just like forcefully pulling that dumbbell down or the barbell mm-hmm. down. It's really hard to jar that, I feel like.
Well, like you said, the the press is usually you're controlling, especially the eccentric load to a degree for a lot of people. And you take something from the rig, doing like a kipping movement, like a toe to bar or a pull up, that eccentric load is not as controlled for a lot of people. And that's where the injury usually occurs, because they kind of slam down. And that's why we kind of really harp on building more strict work, because if you can have the lat and the scapular control of the shoulder, their injury rate would go down tremendously compared to somebody where, you know, they're trying to do a kipping pull up and they can't do the strict work yet because they don't have enough scapular and lat strength to help support that shoulder joint in a hanging position. Mm-hmm. There's a higher chance that you're going to slam down and hurt the shoulder in the process, right? That's why we're really harping you guys of doing strict work and making sure you're getting X amount of reps before you advance these more technical movements. So I would probably say, yeah, that's probably your number one thing that you see people in the way of a shoulder injury would usually occur would be something on the rig, right? So based off that, if somebody's like, ah, you know, well, I'm kind of, my shoulder's been kind of really bothering me on like pull-ups, like what should I do? Mm-hmm. What would be like your number one thing to kind of go to?
I know for me, the two things that probably helped me the most was one, as simple as it sounds, is some sort of like dead hang. Just hanging from a rig, whether you're just with a pronated grip. For me, it was always a supinated grip. I always felt way tighter in that supinated position. I feel like it just, it, almost like my lats were always super tight, kind of like you were saying, and that supinated position really opened that lat up. But also, I think some sort of like...
Let's say somebody's like, oh, it hurts to hang.
Hang. So I would say some sort of like internal, external rotation is probably your next best bet. So whether you're doing that with a dumbbell, I know you showed me the little pulley thing the other day. I don't know if you've been doing that or not. But something to where you can like progressively overload that over time with some sort of weight, whether you're starting at 2.5 pounds, going to 5 pounds, maybe you're grabbing a 5 and a 2.5.
But using an example, so somebody's like, I don't know what he means by internal, external rotation.
So internal, external rotation would be like, if you were to sit on your butt, prop a knee up, so bring your heel to your butt, prop your elbow on top of your knee, and then from there, you're trying to drop your hand closer to like almost like your calf, right? And then ideally, if you can go straight down, that's awesome. But then from there, you're externally pulling that hand back to the top position, right? That would be one good way.
If you just YouTube dumbbell external rotation,
that would be an easier way.
That would probably be the best
way to visualize it. But those are really good. And then I know for me, some sort of like carry overhead. So for me, it was like a kettlebell overhead carry, or you could do like a front rack carry. That's really good. It even like strengthens your scaps over there with the front rack carry. And honestly, just like range of motion, right? So like some doing some sort of like shoulder shrugs, as simple as that sounds, like doing actual like circles with your shoulders. That's really good stuff too.
Well, I think a lot of people view like injury as like, I need to stretch more per se.
But that can honestly hurt you more.
Well, like you said, I mean, because you're just increasing range of motion, right, you don't have strength in. And it's really like a simplistic way of thinking about mobility, where it's really just thinking about it in like, so there's a difference between mobility and flexibility. Like we had this discussion the other day at 9 o'clock, where somebody was kind of asking that question, like, what's the difference between your flexibility and your mobility? So your mobility will never outdo your flexibility.
Sure.
Right? So if I, like, if you take your finger and you lift your finger up off a table as high as you can, that will be your mobility, right? And then if I pull back on that same finger with the other hand to increase range of motion, that's my flexibility.
Sure. Flexibility is pretty much the
your most, complete right? In range of motion, right? If somebody, like most people, like if you sit down and reach for your toes and you just kind of reach forward, that would be like your passive mobility. And then somebody were to come press on your back, you put a weight in your back,
flexibility,
and you get an extra, you know, couple inches out of that, you, that's your flexibility, right? So in essence, by increasing your flexibility, you potentially increase your mobility, essentially is what it comes down to. And is that still important to a degree? Yeah, no doubt about it. Like if you can increase your flexibility and your mobility, yes, that is advantageous more often than not. But with that being said, the other piece of the pie that people don't think about, because it's not as easy to do, maybe per se, is the strengthening aspect of that, right? So if I take that same example of if I'm going to reach for my toes, right? Like I'm working my flexibility and my mobility, but how would I strengthen that? So another great exercise to pair with that would be like a Jefferson curl.
Sure.
Right, where essentially I'm doing that same movement of rounding my back and flexing my hamstrings with a weight in my hand. And then I'm having to pull myself out of that position back to an extended standing position, essentially. So I'm getting that stretch of the hamstrings, but I'm also strengthening the spinal erectors and the hamstrings and the glutes to get out of that range of motion. Right, I have to be smart about it. I just can't load up a like 225 pounds and do that. Right, it might be a 5 pound, 10 pound dumbbell, whatever it may be, and I can increase that load over time.
Yeah.
Right, but that's truly the only way to have injury prevention through these end ranges is by strengthening those things. I think a lot of people just look at it one-sided of, you know, going through gym class or athletics as just like, oh, it's going to stretch, and that's going to be our injury prevention. And that's really not anywhere near the amount of extensive that you're going to have to do to be injury or bulletproof in certain things, right? So when it came to the shoulder, like your biggest thing was like hanging if possible. Mm-hmm. So,
which when I say hanging, also like you might not be able to hang with your feet off the ground. Like you might have to put your feet on the ground.
Well, I was going to use that earlier when I kind of said somebody maybe it hurts their shoulder to hang from a bar, right? Sure. You can do a toe assisted hang.
And that was for me. Like I had to do toe for a long time. And then from there, like over time, you're slowly kind of picking your feet up, whether it's 1 foot off the ground and then eventually you're getting both feet off the ground, right?
Well, you got to think like just in general. Like that's one of like the most natural human things to do is like hang from something, right? And we don't really do that anymore as we get older. You don't hang for long periods of time. And so it's great for us to grip strength and shoulder health. I know a lot of times if we program the warm-ups, people bitch about them, but they are really a good tool. And even you can advance forward by doing like single arm hangs.
Sure.
Like I think even back in the CrossFit used to program those the hip taps.
Hip taps, yeah.
So hanging hip taps.
What was that? We did that.
It was a hero workout.
24-hour workout.
It was a hero workout that has hip taps.
And those are hard.
Those are hard.
That was like one of the worst workouts.
So essentially all it would be is you would hang from a bar, you would let go, drop your hand, touch your hip, and then you would trade alternating hands back and forth from a hanging position, which is actually a really good exercise for the shoulders. Be good for like rehab work as well. So hanging is a great tool. Working on internal and external rotations, so like some type of like, you could do like a Cuban press,
sure,
dumbbell external rotations, you could do cable external rotations, you could even do, I know like you program Kyle those external rotation walkouts.
Yeah, well that was another thing is like stability, right?
Stability
and not just strength also, because I know stability is like huge.
Well, that would be like an overhead walk would be like stability. The other one I would probably layer in would be like a pullover.
Pullover?
Would be like
a dumbbell?
Yeah, like a dumbbell pullover. So think of it like when you're doing like a toe to bar or even like a kipping pull up or a bar muscle up, right? Where you're kind of like having this pressing down motion on the bar, right? Where essentially like think like you're hanging from the bar and you're just kind of pushing down with your arms, where your body's not going behind the bar, your arms being long, if you can visualize it that way. So building range through that lat and through that serratus and building more overhead stability is by laying perpendicular on a bench. So like you're basically, the bench is here, you're laying perpendicular to it, it would kind of look like a T with your upper back against the bench, and you would hold that dumbbell and then bring that dumbbell fully overhead as much as stretch you can get, and then pulling it back over.
Yeah, I think like hip thrust.
Yeah, like a hip thrust setup essentially, but instead of being like hip thrust, you would keep your hips in the air and off the ground. You would hold the head of a dumbbell, let that thing pull you back, you'd get a big deep stretch of your lats, and then you'd pull it back over again. I think it's probably
like
your best cool.
One of the first things, that's literally the first exercise you do a lot of times in physical therapy.
It's like a pullover.
It is a pullover, right? So those are all really good. And even, I'm going to be completely honest, something that's helped me that I always thought was stupid since going to therapy and everything was the ball. So you take like a... So like you take a yoga ball or whatever it may be. Like I use a little dodgeball that we have at the gym, but put your hand on it, press it against the wall, and you literally just do big ABCs circles on it, right? I have like Kyle, for instance, he's doing like, I think right now, a minute at a time, which if you do that for a minute, I don't care who you are, it's going to burn, right?
Yeah.
And that's just kind of like getting blood flow to the area. But all that stuff's really good for the shoulder, though.
Yeah. I think it's good for like pre-exhaustion and kind of getting the area to kind of get warm.
And that's what they use it for.
I think that's a good starter. But I wouldn't say like that's the exercise.
That's not your end all be all.
That's not that's the exercise that's going to make you feel like healing, right? It might be like a good like warm up before you go into a movement, right? So let's say for instance, like you kind of have some shoulder stuff going on. It's not like bad. This is kind of twingy. Like it'd be a good warm up to kind of go into like pull ups or something like that.
For most of you, if you let's say you were to do that for a workout and then I guarantee that probably make you feel better. It's not going to fix it, but it will loosen it up to in a way that you're probably not going to feel it in your workout, right?
Well, I think with all like the other exercises, like the double X rotation or the pullovers, things like that, you can do like a progressive overload with, and you can actually increase the strength because of that. What I mean by that is, you know, if I'm doing a little ball, the only option really at my disposal is like more time.
Sure.
You know, but it's not really stressing the joint to like strengthen per se. Like an extra rotation or like a dumbbell pullover would be something that where I could add load. I can start through an end range that's comfortable enough for me, that's feels safe for me. But then over a period of time, I can increase by increasing more load, right? I could do like a 10-pound dumbbell, do that for a week or two, then a 15-pound dumbbell, do that for a week or two. I could increase the reps. So I could do a 10-pound dumbbell for 5 reps and do 8 reps and 10 reps and 12 reps. And I progressively overload that to make that joint stronger, right? And so I think it's you kind of have to kind of find that balance of like, what are some good movements to kind of get that particular area nice and warm and get a lot of blood to the area, right? To promote healing anyways, but also having movements in there that are actually going to strengthen that area.
And I know you kind of even taught me is like, or at least you showed me was not just sitting in like a banded internal stretch, but like actively moving throughout that banded internal stretch, which to me, I feel like is more beneficial than actually just sitting there in that internal stretch.
Well, I feel like when back in the day when I would try to focus on getting better internal rotation, like
it always hurt worse.
Crank, it always would make my shoulder feel worse. And then, like, I actually would injure my shoulder more around those times.
You end up hurting it more, and then you're like, all right, well, I'm done doing this.
Like a couple of times I would like really focus on working on getting better internal rotation of my shoulder, and I would be like, you know, crank on it.
See, that's what I used to do.
Like just crank like it.
Like laying on your side, just laying your hand to the floor.
Yeah, or doing like that bandage internal stretch and just letting that bandage pull you up, and you're sitting there for like 90 seconds, 2 minutes.
Literally the worst thing.
Excruciating. Like you're grabbing like a green band. It's like you're literally like on your tiptoes.
You have your hand on top of the band pulling down.
Yeah, like you're on your tiptoes like trying to like to get out of it. And I would do that stretch for a couple weeks, and inevitably what ended up happening would be I would injure my shoulder around that time frame. I would be doing like a snatch or a clean or a jerk, and I would hurt my shoulder. You know, and then it would take a couple weeks for it to kind of go away. And then, you know, a couple months down the road, I start working on it again, and I hurt it again.
Hurt it again.
Right? And so I think when it comes to like the internal rotation of the shoulder, like I think naturally a lot of things contribute to the tightness of your internal rotation of your shoulder. I think a lot of it also has to do with like your sitting positions throughout your day.
Posture.
Like you have so many people that kind of sit with that tilted front shoulder like this, like where their shoulders are kind of internally rotated all day, and they kind of sit like this all day, or they're at a computer all day like that. And so inevitably either shoulder flexion gets really tight or their shoulder internal rotation gets really tight. And with the internal rotation, I feel like it's one of those things where, increasing it's like that is great, but more so, especially with that one, you have to be very gentle on what kind of range of motion you put it through.
Internal's tricky.
You can't like just like crank on it.
Not hammer it.
And then really being due diligent, like learn, like getting your body the build strength out of that end range, especially through the internal rotation is crucial there, in my opinion. So that's kind of the shoulder. So if moving to the back. So I'd probably say this is probably your second most common.
Second.
Would be back.
Back's a tricky one to me.
Back's more complicated.
I feel like
it could be
way
multitude
more complicated
things.
Than like a shoulder or like a knee. Mm-hmm. Because there's so many things that could be going on with your back. It could be your hip. It could be your fucking. It could be your IT band. It could be your core. It could literally be your back. There's so many things that go on. I feel like it's really hard to like diagnose what's wrong with your back.
Yeah, I would say like it's like there's like one. Thing
and
for
a lot
sure,
of times it's a collective deal, right?
Well, because with the back, it could be a multitude of things as to what's, or there's multitude of reasons why it could maybe be hurting you, and it's hard to give you an exact thing, like this is the thing that's hurting you. I would say probably more often than not, usually it's correlated.
Core.
More often than not always the case. It usually has to do with the lack of core stability or strength that you have. And so in the process of doing that, your back is taking over more of the blunt force, and it's the reason why it's causing you pain. So just by simply building more core stability and strength usually goes the longest way. So the number one I would probably say for most people would be like a unilateral carry.
Sure.
Like a single arm farmer's carry to build that midline strength and stability would go a long ways. I think it's probably your number one bet. I would say increasing your hamstring flexibility. Increase strength through the flexibility, right? So think of it like increasing your range of motion through like an RDL or a seated good morning. I think it's a good one. I would say probably your third best movement on top of that would be some type of bending or rotational movement.
Yeah.
So
like a T-spine rotation or something.
Like a T-spine, or even a weighted thing. So even doing like a dumbbell, like a single arm dumbbell oblique crunch,
okay.
Or a Russian twist.
I was about to say like a weighted
Russian twist. Or like a landmine rotation. So, and that's kind of, once again, still kind of working the core just through a different thing. Because we don't do a lot of twisting in CrossFit, obviously. And that's a great way to help build some more trunk stability.
An old school one is like a banded wood chopper, like a
power banded wood chopper, things like that. Are great tools to use for back steps because you don't get a lot of twisting and rotational work. So it's a way to kind of build your midline through, because that's one, cause the two main things usually with your midline is like stability and obviously rotational. It's kind of the two biggest things that when it comes to the midline that you need to strengthen. So finding exercises that incorporate both of those things can help out your back as well. At least that's off the top of my head that I can really think of.
I mean, those are big ones. I mean, even like people who have like super, it can even be like your hip, right? Like if you have a super weak hip, and what I mean by that is like maybe front of your hip is so tight and so weak, right? Maybe that's getting over fatigued. A lot of times you get people complain about it on a run, right? Lower back blows up on a run. Which a lot of times is either related to like your hip flexor or like you kind of said, like your hamstring, even like your calf, right? Like your calf's super tight, that goes to your hamstrings and you're pulling on your glutes and it's pulling on your lower back. So there's a bunch of different things you can kind of attack that. And like I said, like we were saying earlier, back is so complicated, but a lot of times if you just strengthen your core, strengthen your hamstrings, whether it's a Jefferson curl, whatever it is, I think Jefferson curl is probably one of your best bets. A hip extension on GHD machine is really good. All those things are really, really good for helping shrink the back.
Okay. Hip?
Hip. Hip's a little tricky, I feel like. It really just depends also. I mean, a lot of times, I think everyone's hip is probably weak, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's one of the movements that probably a lot of us lack the most is just strength in your hip. So like anything where you could do like a... So like I saw a pretty cool video the other day Squat University posted, and it was a Division I football team, and one of their first things they do is they're all holding onto a rib post, right? They have one foot on the ground and they're literally like holding their knee up as high as they can hold it, and they're just rotating that knee back and
they're like hip cars?
Yeah, like a hip car. And I thought that was crazy, and so I ended up trying it, and I'm like sweating, like 90 seconds in, I'm like sweating, like literally bad.
Yeah.
And those were like really good. But also it's strengthening that hip flexor, but it's also giving you that range of motion in there too, right? So you get a little bit of both.
Mm. So like all like hip, we're doing like hip cars or shoulder cars and like a pre warm up. But
do you think like a standing bulldog complex?
Like yeah, or like even like technically even a bulldog complex is a kind of like a hip car. But the thing is, usually with those like any type of like those car movements that they're done a very, very slow.
Slow. It's not control. Fast. Not fast.
Very, very slow.
So you watch the video and it's almost like you're watching it in slow-mo with them moving their knees around.
So essentially what you're trying to do is you're trying to go through the deepest in range that you have, you know, actively pulling yourself into an in range. Nobody's assisting. Like you're pulling your knee up towards your chest as high as you possibly can in a very slow and controlled manner. You're hitting that peak contraction, holding that. And then from there, while holding that peak contraction, then going to an externally rotated position, bring your knee outwards away from your body through a very, very slow and controlled motion, as high as you possibly can there, and then holding that for a little bit of time, and then working your way into a internally rotated position. Sure. Basically, think of it like a circle. You're trying to hold the very outskirts of that circle the whole time to that end range. It's kind of the way I picture it. So the whole time you're having to strain and really concentrate on those deep end ranges and having control through those deep end ranges, right? So I think it's a great primer for like particular moves like a squat or a press that you would kind of go through those deep ranges to kind of prep the joint of itself.
Now, I know like for instance, like I've been working with Shaw with his hip for probably, I don't know now, probably 4 months probably. And I mean, we've been doing stuff every day with it. And now we're finally, 4 months later, we're actually getting to the point where he's actually able to do all the class squats again. Like
no
so
pain.
He's running, he's wall balling, he's doing everything right. But I think a lot of that stuff that we did was like, did a lot of Copenhagen planks. We did a lot of pike overs. We did a lot of, so the monkey foot has been a staple, right? So
the knee raises.
Monkey foot knee raises. What that's just something that we could have like progressively overloaded, like we talked about with the shoulder and the back. But all those little things, like, even like pike overs. I had to do pike overs the first time.
Knee flexors.
Oh, dude, so sore, right?
Did you ever do the reverse squats?
Reverse what?
The cable reverse squat.
Cable reverse squat. Yeah, on his back. Yeah. I had him do those. Okay. He does those once a week. So every once a week we do that and overload that by like 5-10 pounds every week or so. Yeah. He's always bitching about that.
Those are tough.
But no, like all that kind of stuff that I can just kind of mention, like were really good things for him to get back to where he needed to be. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, and I would say probably more than not, you probably the most common thing you see people complain about hip in the front of their hip.
Yep.
It's more than not. So a lot of times, I mean, it was like probably the number one stretching we'll also do is probably the couch stretch, obviously.
Couch stretch, for sure.
And the couch stretch is kind of like a 2-in-1 where you can also do the couch stretch where you're not trying to bring your back towards the wall, but you're actually letting your hips sink more forward. Right? And you're a little bit more, you're actually a little bit further, like your torso is more further away from your wall, and the glute and the quad or the femur is actually going more forward. Mm-hmm. That puts actually more stretch on the hip flexor itself. And if you lean back, then it kind of works on some knee flexion, which is great as well. But I think for a lot of you guys, when you guys are doing couch stretch, probably your best is actually let your hip actually sink more forward, more like a 45-degree angle towards the ground.
Even lizard stretch, dude. I think so many people just try to get their elbow to the ground in lizard stretch. But like, if you actually send that back, whatever leg is back behind you, if you send that hip down, you're going to get a crazy stretch to your hip flexor.
Have you done the elevated pigeon stretch? With like pulsing in and out.
So that was enough. We do that every week, right? So we call it pigeon lifts is what I call it. But pretty much essentially we use a bench to where it's a little bit lower. But we actually prop it up in a pigeon, right? So you're creating that 90-degree angle with your foot and your quad. And then from there, you're trying to almost drop your hip straight down, almost like in a squat. Mm-hmm. And then you're using your knee in that, almost like your shin bone, right? To pulse up and squeeze your glutes to the top. And then from there, you're slowly going back down into that almost like squatting position, right? Which I would pair that up with like Copenhagen planks. Mm-hmm. And that was, he would be drenched, right?
Yeah.
But it's really good stuff.
Well, it's one of those things you're kind of working on. A lot of times with people, obviously, they may be lacking either the anterior hip capsules tight just because of the fact they've been sitting in a chair a lot throughout their day. So pairing it up with like a couch stretch and then working on also hip extension rotation and then building like your adductors is usually a good recipe for your hips. Not always the case.
Clamshells.
Clamshells are great to kind of work on building a little bit of strength through that extension rotation as well. Is a great, it's kind of doing the elevated pigeon stretch. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing where you kind of work on that outer glute into that extension rotation. I think it's good to also work on your adductors as well. Like I said, like doing like Copenhagen planks or even like weighted butterflies.
Yeah.
Where you're doing like a butterfly stretch with the dumbbells on your thighs, but you're actually using your groin to help lift them back up. Bring your knees together and then coming back down. I think it's a great exercise as well. I've even seen ones where they'll even just take like a weighted plate on turf and they'll just kind of put their foot and then bring it towards the inside of the body and push that plate across the turf. To work on the adductors and glutes.
Okay.
And also a good one too. So there's a multitude of exercises you can choose from. They all have the same
outcome.
General principle, right? I think some people look at different exercises like, oh, that's the exercise. It's like they're all kind of doing the same things.
Well,
it's just done. It's just what works best, what feels the best for you.
Sure. And that's the thing is like, it's not necessarily doing 100 different movements in a 3-month time frame. It's a lot of times it's just like picking 4 to 6 things, right? And then I think that's a problem with every injury, every joint or whatever you may have. I think y'all try to do so many different things to try to fix it. When in reality, if you were just give 4 to 6 movements or even 3 to 4 movements, the time and respect and just like actually treat that well for 2, 3, 4 months, that's your best.
Yeah. I think a lot of people, that's the mistake they make is they try to, they
see this movement on Instagram, they see this movement on TikTok.
They have a list of 12 different things they want to do. And so you really probably need about 2 to 4 of those things and just do them really consistently for, 4 to 8 weeks. And then if you feel like a movement's not being beneficial to you, then you change that for something that's a different style of movement that has the same outcome, right? Because every movement's going to feel better for somebody else than the other. And I think it's a good point of not constantly changing out the movements all the time.
Then you never know if you're getting better or not, right?
Yeah. Well, that's why you can also gradually progress over time, right? If you're doing like a Copenhagen plank, you might only hold like for 15 seconds.
Sure.
And then, but over time, you can build it up to 30, 45, you know, to a minimum on the Copenhagen plank. But the only way you do that is you got to progressively do that from week to week to week.
Yep.
Right? And so, so that'd be more like hip related. And then lastly, I would say probably your most common osteo would be knee.
Old kneecaps.
Yeah, the old knee from there. So, what's your go to?
So, I know a lot of people, I don't know, or at least I tell a lot of people, or I see a lot of people do it, is the TKEs. And so TKEs is just something kind of like a primer, right? It's not necessarily gonna, it's non-impact. It's something that essentially what you're gonna do is you're gonna take a green band, tie it up knee height on the rig. You're gonna put that band around your kneecap. You're gonna back up as much as you need to, right? And then from there, you're trying to drive that knee to the rig. And then from there, you're just pushing that knee back into that position, squeezing that patella tendon, right? So you're kind of targeting that patella tendon in a sense. That's some really good stuff, and you can even overload that. I see a lot of y'all just keeping your heel down and pulsing your knee. You can actually even like roll that to like the ball of your foot.
That's really the proper way to do it.
And that's the best way, right? So now you're getting even more range of motion into that movement. And so that's something for y'all. If y'all do, it's like if you're Cooper, if you're listening, you should probably do that. But that's some really good stuff. I know you're a really big fan of the backward sled drop or sled walk.
Yeah, I think I'm more of a fan of doing like the Poliquin step down more than the sled
itself.
Me personally, I feel like I get more benefit personally from doing like a Poliquin step down than the sled.
Okay.
So like it's all the same general principle where like the TKE is the terminal knee extension where you're using that band behind the knee, like you said. I think, like you said, it's a good, maybe a good primer, a good warm up pre. But when it comes to like the Poliquin step up, right? So essentially you would use like the slant board.
Sure.
Right? And then you would ideally like to elevate it up on like some plates to get a deeper range of motion. And then you essentially lower yourself down forwardly where one foot is coming off the slant board, making contact with my heel on the ground and coming back up, where you're going through anywhere from, if you're keeping on the floor, it could be only like an inch or two of range of motion to upwards like maybe like 6 to 9 inches range of motion. And doing, you know, 10, 15, 20, 25 reps of that is a great way to help build up more like that tier quad, that quad, and help build the structure around the knee a little bit better. And you can also progressively overload that over time with like using a dumbbell or barbells, things of that nature. And I feel like that gives me the most burn while doing so and gives me the most stability from doing that. I think it's probably at least my number one exercise. There's different style of step-ups. But I like the Poliquin step up the best. There's another one where you roll to the ball of the foot with each rep. But I can't remember that one off the top of my head. Essentially, you're doing like the same exact style of step up.
Okay.
But you would start flat-footed, and as you roll, as you go down to that, like if you're going to, I'm sitting on a 45-pound plate, so I'm going to let my foot go out in front of me. I'm trying to make contact with the floor. I would roll to the ball of the foot, and then as I come up, go back flat-footed.
So the foot on the plate, you're rolling to the ball?
So as you go down, you roll the ball of the foot, and then as you come back up, you come back flat-footed, right? I forgot the name of the style of that one. That's a good one, too. That one seems to be...
That one's probably more advanced, huh?
It's more advanced, yeah, because it's like when...
like you might need to hold on to like a rig post or something.
Yeah, because like when I first started doing them, I'm like, oh, shit, there's a lot of instability here.
Sure.
So I think that's a really good one. I'm trying to think of anything else on top of my head. Any type of step up like that variation is really, really good. And then...
What's your opinion on sissy squats? To me, that just looks like a disaster to happen. But I know everybody preaches squat universally. Everybody preaches about
squats.
It, but I'm like, it looks like a disaster.
I've done them a little bit.
Like I would almost rather you do like a reverse Nordic curl.
Don't hit that decline button. All right, I had a phone call there. But yeah, I would almost prefer a reverse Nordic curl.
That one seems.
Compared to a sissy squat.
Way better.
I feel like just because, and also that one as well, you can build through a better range of motion over time and you can progress that easier over time, right? So like all a reverse Nordic curl would be is essentially think of like you're kneeling.
Sure.
Right? And then you would then, while keeping your hips locked in, so you're not going to break the hip. So like a heel sit would be like I'm allowing my butt to go down to my heels, yeah, and I'm kind of like this 90-degree angle where my quad and then my torso is in a 90-degree. Whether Nordic reverse Nordic curl, you would just lay back, where essentially the first thing that would hit the ground would be your upper back, because your hips are staying locked in. Like your butt wouldn't hit your heels until your back would hit the ground, essentially. And then you would then come out of that back to a kneeling position while your hips stay locked out the whole time. And that's obviously a very advanced move if you were able to achieve all that, if you were to go all the way down to the ground and back up again. But you could progress that where either A, you're going through a limited range of motion, so maybe you only go like halfway down to like a box or a ball, and you come back up. Or you could go through the full range of motion and use a band.
A band.
Right? So maybe you have the passive range of motion where you have the knee flexion to be able to actually achieve that range of motion, but you just don't have the strength to get out of it. You could essentially just hold onto a band or a cable and lay back, and that band obviously can help assist you as you come up out of there. I think that would probably be a better option than
the assisted squat. I think it's a really good option, feel like. Have I ever done that? No. But I do think that was a good option.
Yeah, I would think that would probably be a better go with when it comes to the knee compared to the sissy squat itself. I think there's a little bit of some benefit to like the whole tib
raises
and calf area as well.
I think that's a slept on one.
I think that's more so if people have more, which if people here are running or jumping.
Sure.
I think that's advantageous. I think if you're somebody who doesn't run or jump, I don't know
if it's going to benefit you too much.
I guess still to a degree, you're going to still have to, everybody's on a wall.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's still some benefit to that. I just don't know if that's where most of your money should be spent compared to somebody who maybe is like running and jumping a lot, mm-hmm. then that would have more benefit for the knees compared to not doing it at all. Right. Sure. So I do think that's also, there are some benefits of doing like tip raises and like calf raises as well to help strengthen the lower half of the leg, compared to just always focusing on the quad or the hamstring around the knee itself. So I think this is also benefits there as well. But to kind of like sum all this up, I guess more than anything else is, obviously I think as individuals, we have all these other things that we want to work on, mm-hmm. right? Like we want to try to get fit, or we want to try to look better, and, having a nagging injury and taking care of the nagging injury isn't like the most glamorous, fun thing to do. No. It's not going to make you look any better. It's not going to make you lose any more weight or, drop body fat or build muscle. And so because of that, a lot of times people put it on the back burner and they're like, this is kind of whatever. But in all actuality, it really doesn't take that much time out of your week. If you were to take
everything we just said, you could do in 8 minutes.
Yeah. If you took 2 10-minute sessions out of your week and do it consistently enough with maybe like 1 mobility exercise a day, mm-hmm. You got to do this 1 stretch a day, you can see a lot of benefit for doing that. But a lot of times people just kind of put it on the back burner, like, it'll go away.
And you put it on the back burner until it gets to the point where you might have to go to the doctor or something, yeah. right?
It's like being proactive instead of reactive. Sure. And so I would totally say like that's the number one thing that you guys need to think about doing is actually setting aside time. It doesn't have to be anything dramatic, but just a little bit of like 10 or 15 minutes twice a week could go a really, really long ways when it comes to like these little nagging injuries from time to time. And inevitably, they will occur over a long enough time period. So kind of what we talked about at the beginning of the podcast is just because you have something going on, don't let that be the thing that deters you from showing up and getting your fitness still in because of this little nagging thing that you have going on. We always work around things as needed. Just don't let that be your excuse as to why you shouldn't do anything at all. Unless it's obviously a very serious injury, that's all another ball game, but that's not what we're talking about here.
We're talking about little bitty nagging things.
Yeah. So anything else you want to add to that there, Kel?
I don't think so. I think we got it.
So hopefully you guys got something out of this. If you got something going on, be sure to let us know.
And
we always kind of help you guys out and send you some exercises, or if you actually want a structure program, that's something we can also offer you guys if that's something on top of that. If you made it this far in the podcast, there are 2 things. You got Christmas party coming up December 2nd.
Yep.
And then the Christmas shirts are now live. If you want to go pre-order one of those, you got till Wednesday to get those in. And then we'll talk to you guys next time.
See you.